I received another one of the beautiful letters about Jesus from Keith that I would like to share with you. Dearest Mother, and behold, Jesus looked upon the faces of the people that were before him. Each face is the face of God, he thought to himself. And yet they do not know this. Every breath of the sweet air they take is God breathing, and every tear they shed in their deepest sorrow is God crying. And as he stood in thought, one of the people asked him, Jesus, loved one of God, answer me this. If God indeed is love, and you tell me I am he, then why do I still hate my brother? Jesus then smiled and looked into the man's eyes. In them he saw the eternity of the age of God, the infinity of the love of God, and the constancy of the grace of God. Then he answered, thy question is difficult for thee to answer only in the way thou ask it. God is indeed love, and I have come unto this age to tell you that thou art he. But ask now not why thou still hatest thy brother. Ask rather why thou still hatest thyself. For in God thy brother is thee, and thou art thy brother. And thou cannot hate thy brother without first hating thyself. Neither can thou love thy brother without first loving all that is thee. My brother, hear my words. Thy hatred is not more than thy choice to close the eyes of the heart. Would the sun shine for thee if thou wouldst shut thy eyes to the day? Would thou hear the song of the bird if thy ears were closed to its melody? Just so hast thou closed thy heart and missed the song of the universe. The eyes of the soul thou hast shut, and thereby have not seen thy God before thee. Open thy heart, reveal thy soul to him that is thy heart and soul, and what thou knowest now as darkness will turn into light. What thou seest as hatred will become the love of he who is thy greater self. Thou livest in the dream of hatred. Awaken to the reality that is the ever-flowing love of God. When thou hast done so, thy brother will stand before as the light of love that is in thee. It takes a great soul to be able to write words as though they came out of the mouth of the Christ. And yet so they did, because it is the Christ in each one of us, as he goes up into the mountain of your being, that puts these thoughts, these words, these feelings into expression from within you. And it's very wonderful. Does anyone have anything that they'd like to talk about tonight?
Mother, I'd like to ask one thing. Jerry's aunt is very sick and she's in the hospital. Maybe you can say a prayer for her.
All right. Now let us all close our eyes very deeply, very hard, and concentrate at the point between the eyebrows. Put your thumb and your first finger on each side of your eyes and hold them steady very gently. Now picture the fire of the Christ in the Christ center. Feel the fire of that light. Feel its warmth increasing, increasing, increasing. Then send it to this child of God who is in deep trouble. Concentrate on her spiritual eye and say within yourself, Father, if it be thy will, make thy child perfect in thee, in all ways, physically, mentally, and spiritually. Hold that light for this child of God, sending the healing rays from the Christ which is within each of you. Amen.
Amen. I would like to tell you that many of the people whom you have prayed for have either written or telephoned shortly after telling that they had a tremendous upliftment from our prayers. And so, when two or three are gathered together in my name, said the Christ, there shall I be in the midst of them. And as I've told you many times before, it isn't only what you receive by coming. It is what you give of God within yourself. And as each one comes and the power of God grows and grows and grows, it becomes a tremendous power, not only to heal those who ask for our prayers, but to heal ourselves of all of the things that keep us in darkness and ignorance, and keep us with the idea that we are separate from God. If you will focus your full attention upon Him in all that you do, you will find that your whole life will open up, that things will start to work for you that before were stagnant, that you will see life with a new vision, that you will feel love in your heart for God in all of your fellow men. But don't forget that there is more than one kind of love. There is human love, and there is divine love. Human love in the beginning is a love of expectancy, a love of first meeting a friend. It is a magnetic pull that attracts you to a certain individual, and you want to know more about them. You are interested in what made them what they are. What makes them attractive to you? Can you learn something from them? Can you give them something in return? And so as time goes on, this friendship deepens and deepens and becomes a greater love. In the case of a man and woman, of course, it then becomes a thing of wanting to possess that one, not only from the sense of possession, to call that one your own, but a possession in the sense of also giving, because possession includes both giving and receiving, because there are two involved. And so each of you, if each of you give yourself one to the other and possess each other, not in the sense of humanhood, but in the sense of the divine, in every way, sharing, letting the words, the thoughts, the music of God flow between you. It is a wonderful thing of upliftment. Wonderful. And then finally, there comes the union between man and woman, or between friend and friend. If it is friend and friend, the union takes place in a totally different way. It is a thing purely of the heart, of giving totally of what you can to make your friend happy and content, to serve God in that one. In the case of the man and the wife, you give yourself one to the other. But this is just the first step, because this sacrament of holy marriage that takes place is such a tremendous thing, because it is through the union of man and woman, just as through the union of spirit and nature, that creation continues to exist, to procreate itself. When you think about reincarnation, there are many still in the world today, a great many, who still doubt it. But if you stop to think even of this marriage between the man and the woman, and as a result of their union, that a child comes forth, and that child is clothed with the spirit of flesh, but it has within it the infinite spirit of God. And then that child grows from a child into manhood, into womanhood. And again, this union takes place. And again, another soul is born. Incarnation after incarnation, with the one spirit flowing all the way through. And this is the way of all God's creation, because it is so in the flowers that are planted in the ground, in the grass that grows, in the trees that bear fruit. And finally, again, the seeds fall to the ground and take root, and the tree appears as though dead. It sheds, seems to shed its outer leaves, its outer garment. So all of life is a continual putting on and taking off of the garment which God chooses to wear at that particular moment, regardless of what form it is that he has created. But the most tremendous thing is this form of man and of woman, which he has created, male and female, made he them, so that they could continue to express him, all of the things that are within himself, because they are made after his image and after his likeness. As I have said many times before, God has imprisoned himself within your body of flesh, and only you can release him. Isn't that a strange thing? Only you can give him liberty and freedom when you decide to give yourself up totally to God. I was talking to someone this afternoon, long distance, and they were telling me about this book and that book and some other book and some other book, and it went on and on and on. The cream of the crop insofar as reading was concerned. And they felt they had to study every single religion there was so that they would make a fit teacher for God. And I said to them, you can throw away all the books that you speak of and put your mind fully upon God, and he will take you to himself. Because when you read the books, your attention is on the things of the outer. True, they are given to us to inspire us. And it is very inspiring to read the spiritual life of another and to see the steps which they have taken in order to bring them to the supreme moment of their realization of oneness with God. But it is greater still to take that which inspires you, take it within yourself, and go within into the deepest cavern of your heart, the highest citadel of the mountain of your own consciousness, and fix your full attention upon God alone. Can you possibly imagine the ecstasy of that marriage between God and the soul, Radha and Krishna? And it is the Christ acting as the bridegroom, and each one of us in the Christian sense, the brides of Christ. There is nothing in the world that is as attractive as this one experience of the realization of your oneness with this great blazing light, which is your very self, God in you. But God waits at the door. Always he waits at the altar of time, you might say, so that he might become the bridegroom. He is waiting for the bride. And he will not impose himself upon you at all, because he wants you to come willingly, to give him all of your love, until you can say truthfully, within your mind, within your heart, within your consciousness, that you of yourself do nothing, that it is your Father who doeth the works. You have not yet arrived at that state of total surrender, of total acceptance of God's will, because you are still telling God, I'm going to do this. I want to do that. Somebody said to me the other day, is it not good to have the desire for God realization? Of course it is good. You must have it. There must be that burning, yearning desire for God realization. You must be constantly reaching out with all of your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength to the exclusion of everything else. God alone should be your goal. And I must stress over and over and over again the words of the Christ when he said, seek ye first God and his kingdom, and then all of these other things shall be added unto you. But we go searching, and we get very depressed because we don't get the things that we want. They don't seem to materialize. Our prayers aren't answered. Why? Is it because God has failed us? No, it is because we have failed God. We have not given him all of ourselves. We have not surrendered all to him. We have not sought him first. We are still seeking his gifts. We are still seeking to feel right in the human sense. Then, if there's any time left over, we will give our attention to God. Again comes the age-old question, is a guru necessary? A guru is definitely necessary, because it is so easy to fall into the ego trap of thinking you can go to God all by yourself. True. If there wasn't anyone else to go to, if there weren't any books or any teachers, and your heart lifted itself up to God, and in yearning you cried out for him, there is no doubt but what he would reveal himself to you. But this is the rarity. It is not the rule. And you need help along the way. You cannot possibly help yourself when you are going through difficult experiences. But the Guru comes but for one purpose, and that is to teach you the truth, which he himself has experienced. And when he has experienced the whole truth, that truth is the same truth which is in every man, in every religion, in every guru the world over. But he has experienced it in accordance with his path, his way. But that same underlying truth is the same. The way is the same because man is. And he is made in the same shape the world over. He is made with 7 spinal centers. He is made with a brain. He is made with organs that function and keep him alive. That way is the same. But each man's nature is different. Each man's karmic pattern is different. His consciousness is either developed or not so much so. Some are ready to receive right now, and that they reach out hungrily for anything that the teacher can give. And others are just beginners on the path, and it takes them a while. So this is the responsibility of the guru, to teach this truth, to guide and direct each one who comes to him for that purpose. But the disciple's responsibility is equally as great. And the guru many times gives many tests. And this is the way they separate the men from the boys, as the saying goes. Because it depends on the love, the loyalty the devotee has for God in the guru, as to whether or not they will be able to withstand the tests that come before them. But every one that they withstand, every one that tests their faith, and finds them still on their feet, still with complete love and loyalty and devotion to the Guru, that one is a true disciple of God. Because the Guru, as I've stated many times, comes with the sole desire to spread the name of God, to spread the fame of God, and to help each one to realize God within themselves. You cannot do it if you're fighting City Hall. If people are taking instructions from this one and that one and the other one. And so one says one thing, they may be expressing the same truth, but they say it in a different way. So then the disciple becomes confused and says to himself or herself, which one is true? And they wind up by losing faith, sometimes in one, sometimes in both, and sometimes in God himself. So for this reason alone, the mind should be fully fixed upon God in the Guru. There are many, many teachers, millions of them, but there are very few completely God-realized souls on the earth. This is the truth. I remember when I went to one saint in India, he told me that at all times there were 12 real yogis in the world, just 12 that had gone all the way to God. And then he said to me an amazing thing, and I say this in no sense of ego, because I was absolutely dumbfounded. He said, I have met 6 so far, and today I have met the 7th, yourself, Mother Hamilton, the only woman and the only one from the West. You could have knocked me over with a feather. But imagine, only 12 real ones in the world at one time. Now there are many who have attained great heights. But to attain full God realization means to go all the way over the top. To use the mind to take you up to that moment of total surrender when you know that of yourself you can do nothing and God comes in and does the work. At no time should you make your mind blank. At no time should you not use your mind and just try to attain a state of being. Because if you do, you are inviting many times forces, entities that will enter in and take over. And insanity many times results in many dire consequences, sometimes even death. Anybody who tells you to make your mind a vacuum doesn't know what they're talking about. They are not a true teacher. Always and forever, the mind should be fixed on God alone. Now, if you can't think of God as pure spirit, which is very difficult for many people, you think of God in the Guru. Not that you want to worship the Guru as a human being, as a form, because that is idolatry. But to fix the attention upon God in the Guru, and until you come to that point, through the Guru's teaching and guidance and direction, where you yourself are ready to go over the top, to go beyond duality, into the ocean, the oneness of God, to experience this bliss, this light, and be absorbed in this flame of light, which is your own soul, God within you. This is the reason for which each and every one of us is put here. And so the guru doesn't want the personal adulation. The guru wants the attention on God in their form in order that they may take you to God in your own form, because nobody else can get your God realization for you. Neither can you get anyone else's for them. You must test each spirit as it comes before you, because many are the traps on the spiritual path. And I'm sure that there isn't one of you who have come to me ever who hasn't been directed to the highest which is within you, not for my sake, but for yours. What higher can there be than God alone, through Christ, the only begotten Son, the consciousness which permeates every form and every atom of space? Always I direct you there. I have but one desire, and that is to help you to realize the highest of that which you are capable of realizing in this lifetime. And if you would only cooperate, if you would get rid of the ego sense, of sometimes the backbiting and the criticism and the gossip, you would make much greater progress, much faster than otherwise, believe me. Your whole mind, heart, and soul should be dedicated to finding your real self. You're not doing this for me or for anyone else, but only yourself. Now, yourself is God within you, not the little pseudo-self, the human ego, which must be crucified on your own cross, which is your body, but your God-self, that Christ within you, the Anointed One. And the experiences must be gone through, because it does not come just as a gift, believe me. You cannot just say, I'm God realized, and have it so. You have to pay the price every step of the way, one way or another. You have to cross that which you did on the way out as you return to the bosom of God. It depends on what your choice is each moment of your life, whether you choose to work in harmony with God's law or against it, if you choose to keep His commandments or to disobey them. It is as simple as that. You yourself decree your own reward or your own punishment. The guru-disciple relationship is a tremendous thing. When it really exists in the true sense of the word, it is one of the most beautiful experiences in the world. It is a romance. It is a love affair, but not in the human sense at all, as one would think. But it is a romance in the spirit of the guru who has found God, constantly reaching out to help the aspiring soul to have that union with the infinite beloved. Everything that the guru does is for that purpose alone, if he or she be what they should be. They want nothing for themselves but the joy of seeing this union consummated. And they will do anything, spend themselves to the last breath, to the last speck of energy, to accomplish that, thinking that their lives will be well spent. This is true. But what does the disciple do about it? There's always the resistance. There's always the criticism going in the back. And there is no greater retardation on the path of spiritual development than criticism of the guru. Because you never know why God in that form is doing a certain thing with regard to certain individuals or an individual. Because they deal with each one separately. They don't just make everybody into the same mold, because then they would be using their will, because they would have an image of how that individual should be. But the true guru has the ability to go inside and see this yet unformed image of the perfection of Christ within that one, to see the things that are still needed to be done, to give a word of love here, a word of caution here, a word of teaching here, and sometimes a spanking when it is well deserved. But if the disciple has humility, if the disciple truly means what he says, when he wants, says he wants God realization, then he will accept everything that comes from the guru as for his highest good, even when it doesn't seem right to him. And he will take his problem inside to God. And he will seek God within himself for the answer, to answer the cry of his heart, perhaps the hurt of his heart, which has been brought about for a very good reason. You see, this human ego is like a stone, and you have to take a pickaxe and chip away and chip away and chip away at it until finally you get it ground to dust. And even the dust must disappear, because this ego is nothing, absolutely nothing, but pure delusion. This one who separates himself from God in consciousness. We pray God that with the beginning of these teachings of truth, where we are casting out sin in the real sense of the word, and that is the idea of separation from God, which contains all sins, that man will be born and grow up with a different image. The thoughts that are injected into the consciousness of the little ones that are coming into the world are most important. We have to be easy with them in the beginning. We have to show them love and understanding, because when we were a child, we had to be taken care of. We had to have our diapers changed. We had to be fed. We had to be dressed and clothed and kept warm. And gradually, as we took our first stumbling steps, somebody had to sort of hold out their hand and guide us so that we wouldn't fall down and get hurt. But you don't get any place with a child by imposing law before they can understand law. You have to give them love. You have to be willing to give a little, to mold yourself to their mood at the moment, to become a child with them, and not be disturbed. Now, this is within reason. Discipline to a degree is necessary. But the age of the child must always be taken into consideration, and their ability to grow, to accept. And if you can instill them with love and patience and understanding, and tell them stories about God and the idea that they are children of God, that they have God within them, that they have this beautiful silver star in the center of their forehead, and that that is the gate to heaven within themselves, and to get them to close their eyes and see that star. You know, you'd be surprised how some of the little ones go around singing the chants that they are taught in Sunday school. And they go home and they talk about the different little things that have happened, and it's made an impression upon them, and it's done good. And many of the ones that I taught myself many, many years ago in the beginning are now young men and women, some of them married, some of them having children of their own. And it's a tremendous thing to me to know that they are still on the path. They're still seeking God. Now, maybe they've strayed a little here and there, but they have this so deeply instilled in them that they will never, never forget it. Master said to me one time, "Why don't you advertise? I would like you to advertise." And I didn't feel directed to do that, even though my guru told me, because the inner guru said, "No, this isn't right. I shouldn't do it at this time." And I remember one time that there was a convocation down south, and I wanted so badly to go there, to be with him, to sit at his feet and learn of his wisdom. And I didn't have any money. And I prayed to God night and day. I would have walked, if it had been possible, in order to get to be with him. And finally, at the last moment, we were given some money, and my husband and I were able to go. And I was so thrilled that God had made this possible and had answered this deep desire of my heart. So when I had a personal interview with Master, I told him about this. And I was telling it purely to make him know how I realized how greatly blessed I had been. And so he had given Kriya initiation that day, and all of a sudden he called one of the sisters over, and he whispered in her ear. Pretty soon she came back, and she put something in his hand. And so he handed it to me, and he said, "Here, Mildred, I want you to take this." And it was $25. Well, I was horrified to think that maybe he had thought I was asking him for money. And I said, "No, Master, I won't accept this. I won't accept it at all." I said, "I wasn't telling you this because I was asking you for money." I said, "I didn't have that kind of a need. I was just telling you that in praise of God's great blessing." And he said, I know the way you were telling it. He said, I want you to take it. And still I refused. He said, Mildred, take this money. I said, all right, I will take it. And I will use it only for your work in God. So that money, the original bill, stayed with me many, many years. I didn't spend them. I didn't do anything with them but hang on to them. And finally, the first Sunday school that we ever had was in the basement of my daughter's home in West Seattle. And I put more money with what he had given me, and we made a comfortable room in the basement where these children could be taught to worship God. So that's how I used his money, and that's how I advertised. And that advertisement that I put in God's paper at that time has brought more results than I can possibly tell you, and I feel absolutely wonderful about it. Somebody once said to Master, you know, I don't think that it's right that you advertise the way you do. He said, why should I not advertise? He said, God has already advertised his presence in the moon and the sun and the stars, which he has placed in the heavens. He said, should I not advertise him when he himself has done that? And he said, does not Wrigley put up great big signs advertising chewing gum? He said, which is most important? So each one does for God and in God what that one is directed to do. I have never felt constrained to advertise, to go out after one single soul. They go and they come as they please. No one is a prisoner here. I'm not trying to bind anyone in the sense that I try to take away their freedom, their free will. I try to get them to put their attention on God in this form, to absorb all they can from the truth which I give them, only that they may be liberated totally within themselves. Because you can ask for liberation in the outer sense, and it won't buy you one single thing. When you have liberty and license to do whatever you want in the human sense, you are but putting deeper bonds around yourself. This is true. But when you are truly liberated, when you have no sense of responsibility at all anymore, but that when your mind is so centered on God every moment of your life that it is He alone who thinks through you, speaks through you, acts through you, where there's this constant communion between you and the Lord every single moment, then you will know the beauty and the glory of your union with God. It is a tremendous experience. There is none other in human experience which can possibly come up to it. None at all. You don't know this in the beginning, and you hate to give up the things that you like, the things of the senses. But you will find that if you make the effort to put your full attention on Him, you can't give them up by fighting them. You have to put your attention on Him. Take them off of the things that you want and put your attention upon Him alone. And then it will work out. Would you like to go to the back of the room and get a drink of water? You can't play games with God, because He will not be played games with. He will play with you as your playmate, but you cannot in any way fool Him, because He knows every single thing you think, say, and do every moment. And strangely enough, so does the Guru, because they are one. Now, I don't tune in to every single individual each day to find out what they're thinking, what they're doing. As I've told you before, each one has their right to total privacy. But I do exactly what God tells me to do every moment. I follow only His direction. And many times people will even be in a distant city, and He will give me the word that I should call them, I should write to them, I should get in touch with them right now. And it's amazing how somebody will say, or one after another will say to me, I was just thinking about you so strongly. I was just praying, wishing that I could get in touch with you, that I could speak to you. And here you are. Lives have been saved as a result of this. But still, I don't go prying. It is none of my business. It is God's business. But he keeps me well informed, I can assure you. So when somebody comes before me, he doesn't use a set pattern with each one. He uses whatever is necessary to take that individual out of the darkness into the light of their own souls. And it is a wonderful thing to see the change in the expression of the face, to see them come in darkness and depression and despair sometimes, and sometimes in tears, and to see them go away with a light in their eyes, the spring in their steps, and their heart once again right with God. There is no more satisfying work in this whole wide world. There is nothing to compare with it at all. Nothing at all. I repeat myself many, many times. But if I do, it is also at God's direction. Because many times when people hear things only once, they are apt to forget them. And so I keep pounding away at it. God alone, God alone, just as this beautiful chant says. Until this becomes so, their mind becomes so engrossed with this idea of God alone that he sweeps them up and he holds them in his arms. And then they feel the wonder and the beauty and the power of his presence within them. You only begin to live when you have stopped living your life and you let God live his life through you. When you empty yourself of yourself, so that he may come in and fill you with his power and his wisdom and his glory. This is the truth. There are many ways of going to God, but I teach very, very few simple methods, because if I were to do otherwise, it would fill the desire of the mind, which always wishes to be entertained. It always wants something new. Well, you've told me this now. I practiced it a little. Of course, I didn't get any results, but tell me something new that's going to help me to go there that much faster. So many think this, and they won't get any place in so doing. Nothing. You've got to go it all the way with God if you want results. You've got not only to want God realization, or not only to will it, but to want it with everything you have. Everything. And as you practice the things which are given you, as you meditate deeply every morning and every evening and commune with him, and turn your whole life, your whole day's activities, all your thoughts, your words, and your actions, and you say to him each morning, "Here am I, Lord, take me," you will find that there will be a new spring in your step, surely, and a new light in your face, in your eyes, and new energy in your body, that so you can go forth into the world and do whatever job he has assigned you in his name. But you know more and more that you of yourself do nothing, and he will lead you in such wonderful ways, to wonderful people, to wonderful places. Every day of my life, almost now, someone new comes in. And it is an adventure of the soul, because each one who comes teaches me something too. And I find the sweetness of the Lord in that one. I find his wisdom. I find his love, and sometimes his criticism of me, which I take within myself and take a good look at. If I find that I have it coming, believe me, I go to work on it. Because we're only perfect when we are upstairs in the mountain of our own being. Because man can keep on growing. He can keep on learning. And as he grows and as he learns, he sometimes makes mistakes in the human sense. But when he is master of himself and he has given everything to the Lord, then whatever seems to be a mistake is not a mistake at all. It is exactly what God designed for him in order that he might go a little higher on the ladder of God realization, that he might come a little bit closer to the infinite beloved, that he might spend himself a little bit more and widen his consciousness so that he may reach out for another plane. Higher and higher and higher and higher he goes until he goes beyond all form and there's only the light form. And even that disappears into the great light of God so that there are no shadows, no lines, no forms anywhere. No ghosts. then there is total stillness. It's total stillness. Nothing but God everywhere. You have reached that center of your own being, the center of God in the whole universe. And there is nothing but yourself anywhere. And you sit still in this cradle of bliss, this ocean of bliss, and you just experience. It is beyond human power to describe, and also beyond human power to conceive. That is why no man can see the face of God until he has become a God-man. When he is human, no. When he becomes divine, he sees God's face, and he finds it is his very own.